Are you ready?
Here we go.
Test 1, 2.
I feel like I'm bouncing from cloud to cloud.
Wow, we're ridiculous.
So stay tuned.
I like what we're doing.
Or don't.
Oh, that might be my favorite thing to ever happen.
Is this not the coolest thing you've ever heard?
Well, how about this?
Yes. Hold up.
It's the Pepper and Dylan After Show Podcast.
Welcome to the After Show Show. Today is March 31st. Thank you so much for joining us. Please rate and subscribe if you could. And then we love when you share screenshots of you listening to it. It just really helps get the word out that there is a podcast for the Pepper and Dylan Show. So we appreciate you being here.
Yeah.
Five-star reviews only if you don't have a five-star review.
No.
Listen, you can review it to one of our phones. You can review it to one of our Instagrams, our Facebooks.
Honest. I feel like a lot of people are starting to really like this podcast.
You were wrong.
No, well, I was messaging a lot of folk who would, because we're getting people always to post, and we'll put a little secret code at the end of this podcast, right? Made it, loved it was the code from last week.
Right.
And then you post it on the Instagram.
Oh, you guys loved it. I got a made it, hated it.
Did you get made it, hated it?
Yeah. Were they just joking or is it? No.
But we'll put a little cut. And then if you get it all the way through, we'll bury it. You know, we're not going to put it at the end. We'll bury it some way in here so you can't just skip to the end.
Oh, do you see?
And then you tag us with a screenshot of listening to the podcast or whatever you're doing while you're listening to the podcast with that slogan. Mm-hmm. Then people will be like, oh, what the hell does this mean? And then we'll build it up and it's becoming more popular and hopefully we'll be able to, do this as a career instead of radio, which is slowly dying. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
We're taping this a little late and this guy's probably going to be a little impatient. So we should probably call him. I don't know how good this is going to be.
Well, this is going to be great. Are you kidding? Like, first off, we're talking about one of my favorite subjects.
Mount Everest?
Yeah. Second, this guy had a heart attack. Here's the thing, though. Before we get him on the line.
Yeah.
This guy, this might be the last time we talk to him.
That's a good point.
And the good chance of that, by the way.
That's a good point. So we're going to talk to Leo Naiman. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Who is he's ready to become the first ever heart attack survivor to climb Mount Everest. And then Savan, through the questions of Savan, he is going to find out all about our journey in 2006, because people seem to like those old stories, which, by the way, somebody wants Robbie and or Savan from last week's podcast to drive to Calgary. As like an anniversary or like in celebration, and to finally find out how long that it takes.
Oh, okay.
So maybe we'll do that, but let's go here. Did I finish what we're going to talk to Savan about, or did I just interrupt myself?
It's hard to listen sometimes.
About the 2006 Stanley Cup run and us driving around from city to city.
Right.
So, Savan, get some questions ready so we can outline that experience for you.
Okay.
What's so funny? What?
Hello.
Is this Leo?
Yeah, this is Leo.
Hi, Leo. It's Pepper and Dylan. We're sorry we're calling you late. We ran into some things.
Give me a second.
Yeah, no problem. There you go.
No
good old Leo.
Worries.
Okay, here goes.
Hey, can you hear us okay?
I was just switching to my AirPods, sorry.
No worries, Leo.
Okay, cool. You can hear us all fine? Everything's good?
It's all good, yes.
How old are you, Leo?
I'm 51.
51 years old. And let's just make sure we have all the information because we have limited information, but we're all interested. There's three of us on the show. Well, hi, Savan. There's four of us. But two of us, Robbie. Say hi, Robbie.
Hey, Leo.
Robbie. How you doing?
Good, man.
He is an active mountain climber. And Dylan is an active Mount Everest documentary watcher.
Oh, I love everything to do with Everest.
Okay. So when we heard what you were attempting to do, there was some interest there. So let's make sure we've got it right. You are a heart attack survivor.
In 2018.
In 2019, you had a heart attack, and you are training and preparing to become the first ever heart attack survivor in Canada to climb Mount Everest?
Yeah, and the second man on Earth to ever done it,
After a heart attack. Now, how severe was your heart attack?
Oh, well, it was very severe. My heart stopped for 55% of my heart stopped for 47 minutes.
Oh, whoa. Jesus. Okay.
So I would. What doctor said it was that I would be probably need a transplant, heart transplant after my heart attack.
Did you have a heart transplant?
No. Oh. They said that I would probably need one because of the damages in my heart. Your heart is a muscle, and when you get when you stop blood flow to a muscle for such a long time, it's most probably that you're gonna lose that part, that portion of the muscle, if you feel your hand or things like that.
And how come you had a heart attack? back in 2019?
Well, that was one of my wives. That was one of my questions. Why I don't drink, I don't smoke, mm-hmm. and I keep a healthy lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, still had the heart attack. So that was one of my wives. That and later on, I learned that. My heart attack came because of my dad. And then I started to do my research after my heart attack, and I found that my dad had two heart attacks, and he was a peacemaker, actually.
Oh, yeah, he had a pacemaker. Okay. So, yeah, there's quite a genetic link to heart disease. So
when is it that you are planning on heading up?
Well, my plan is in 3 days. I'm going to Nepal on Saturday.
Oh, you're doing it right now. Like, your plan is to go for the May stretch? Like, normally it's a May stretch that you can get up there, right?
Yeah, you have two times in the year. One is in fall and one is in spring. Fall is a little bit more challenging. It's a little bit more speed climb. And then spring is a little bit more, you know.
Oh, so you're doing it right now. Are you
prepared? He's leaving this weekend,
Dylan.
Oh, my God. We're interrupting his packing.
This could potentially be the last time anyone ever speaks to you.
Don't say that.
No, but it's true. It's an absolute true statement. When you take something like Mount Everest on, you are taking your life into your own hands. Over 300 people have died on Everest that just still lie there.
Is that true?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. As of 2019.
That even seems low.
Over 300 people did not make it, right? Altitude sickness, weather, anything can happen.
And so how
Lack of experience as well.
Lack of experience. Yes. So are you an avid mountain climber? Like, have you climbed a lot of mountains Alberta?
I've been since I was 14.
14, okay.
I was 14, so yeah, I've been around for a while.
Okay. I detect an accent. So are you born and raised here in Edmonton, or where are you from?
No, I was born and raised at the age of 32. I moved to Canada from Colombia.
Okay. Okay. All right.
So yeah.
Is there an active mountain climbing community in Colombia? They have big mountains out there?
I was born in a very poor family.
Okay.
So I didn't have the gear and the reach and to get expensive gear. Climbing gear is very expensive.
Are you nervous going into Saturday? I mean, once you get there, there's quite some time still as you get to base camp and you start to acclimatize and everything. But are you nervous?
There's a little bit of mixed emotions. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a little bit of fear. It's a little bit of fear. Always, even if I go do ice climbing in the Rockies, even if I go to climb one of the mountains nearby Jasper Banff, there's always a little bit of that mixed emotions.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of excitement and happiness to be able to to get there and start getting to, you know, say hello to friends. I got friends in there that are waiting for me, and you know,
what do your friends here think and your family here think? Do they think you're crazy, or are they really excited for you?
There's a little bit of worry, but there's always that trust they have in me and the things I've done in the past. So they know me. One of the things is very clear here. It's that one of the things when you first arrive to that summit is when you realize that your real goal is to get back down.
Yeah.
You're only halfway when you get to the top.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's halfway. So I'm not going to lie to you. I've had accidents in the past climbing. But I'm still alive, and it's because I am I'm a very, very wise person when it comes to mountains. Yeah.
Do you have Sherpas, obviously, that you have paid? How much did you have to pay to have someone take you up?
We are 19 people in the team. We have Sherpas, we have doctors, we have nurses with the COVID-19 protocol, the bubble protocol.
Right.
Now we have to have our own cooks, our own two people cooking for us, all this stuff. It's a big team. Including Sherpas, other climbers that climb in with me. So it's somewhere in the $65,000 Canadian.
Wow, what an investment. So I'm trying to figure out the most delicate way to ask this question, but you said you're attempting to become the first Canadian and only the second person on the planet who has survived a heart attack to climb Mount Everest. I would assume that you're not the second ever to attempt it. So what has happened to the other heart attack survivors? It became too difficult, or did they, God forbid?
I can tell you that I did a research on that because I wanted to reach out to the person, actually from Alberta, I believe, did try attempt to become the first Canadian heart attack survivor, and he died. He died in base. He was taken from base camp to I believe, Kathmandu hospital, and he died of, unfortunately, he died of a completely different situation. He died from Lyme disease.
Oh, wow.
You don't want that Lyme disease, Dylan. Yeah. Avril Lavigne had Lyme disease. It's an awful thing.
Almost didn't make it.
Yeah, no, it was very awful because it's to believe that he got the Lyme disease while he was training in the Rockies, hiking and running and doing things. Yeah. He got bitten by a
tick.
Yeah. Now, so are you, this is a question, but it's an honest question. Are you prepared to die?
Honestly, I'm going to tell you this. Like I said, I'm a healthy human, and I had a heart attack, and I almost died.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So am I right in saying the heart attack was, you know, your brush with death? So you came out of that heart attack, you survived it with a newfound passion for life, and that's when you said, you know what, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. That's what I'm going to do with my life.
It deals with three other things after my heart attack. I'm just not climbing for because, you know, I want to become the first Canadian to be honest. One of the things I'm climbing Mount Everest is after surviving a heart attack, I went to depression and some other things. It was like I always compare it with like a hallway with the lights, all the lights on, and they start shutting off from the end, coming towards you. It was just like that. I couldn't even go to the basement to see my gear room because I couldn't walk for more than 5-10 seconds, and I would be exhausted. My heart didn't respond.
Isn't that incredible?
It's
incredible that you went from that level of weakness to now being physically and mentally prepared to climb the summit Mount Everest. It's
like I said, I lost my identity as a climber, as a man, as a father, as a son. So after losing my identity, I thought helping survivors was going to be one of my goals. It's basically telling survivors, hey, you know what? This is my Everest, right?
Yeah.
If your Everest is to go to the bathroom by yourself, so go for it.
Wow.
And make that be your Everest, right?
As a metaphor. Wow, that's great. What a great way to look at it.
Absolutely.
Are your doctors supportive on this, or are they cautious and they're saying, I don't know if this is a good idea, Leo?
My cardiologist last appointment, he said, you know what, Leo, you're ready for Everest. Go for it.
Wow.
Those were his words. And I was like, can I record that? Can you say that again? Don't make it public.
Okay.
But it's my mental health as well, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you leave Saturday.
Oh, my goodness, this is awesome.
Sorry.
And you're back when?
45 to 60 days, depends on the speed, weather, many other things. It takes a few days to get up there.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's not just you get there, you jump out of the plane, and then you're up there. No, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And you know.
Okay.
Plus, weather permitting, there's
a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, you need the time.
Well, I'll tell you what, we would love to hear from you when you get back and hear about the experience. We hope you make it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not you live. I mean, we hope you make it to the top because a lot of
things, like you get to those you're on the doorstep of it and they have to turn around, which has got to be the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Because you made it through like base camp 1, 2, and 3. There you are heading up to the final summit and people like are so close and a Sherpa's telling you like, no, we got to go back down. And everything you want to do is fight them and go like, no, I'm so close. I want to do it. But they know better than you that you're going to die. They're like, no, back down.
You know, one thing that you learn when you do mountains is to listen to what the mountain's trying to tell you. And in this case, definitely. You need to listen to these guys. These guys know better than us what we're facing out there.
Yeah.
And especially in
well, because your stubbornness and your dream and your goal can kick in and override your common sense. So okay, Leo.
Wow.
Best of luck to you.
Yes.
Thank you for taking the time. We appreciated talking to you.
Can't wait to hear from you about the experience.
We hope we hear from you in 60 some odd.
Be able to tell you.
No, you got it. Okay, Leo. Best of luck. Stay healthy.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leo.
Okay.
You know, from one heart attack survivor to another,
survive a heart attack. Stop
it's a
it.
Pretty daunting task for him to do that. And I'm very anxious to see. And we understand if you were listening to that, it got a little difficult with these, English, obviously his second language, but he did a good job and he's a fighter. 100%. He's a fighter.
I love it. I love these stories. I think it, like Robbie, I mean, I love Everest. Mm-hmm. I love the idea. I love like in my gut, in my soul, mm-hmm. I would want to do it. I just know I couldn't physically do it. But I would want to.
He had a heart attack, Dylan. Of course you could do it. It just takes a lot of effort and go. Need I remind you, which we've done on this podcast before, and I get people now commenting on my first ever Instagram post was a picture of you at the old studios, the old Virgin Studios, at the peak of your CrossFit health and fitness.
Even then, though, I couldn't take on Everest.
Why? Because mentally you weren't tough enough? Oh, no, God, you were much tougher. You were very strong mentally.
No, today I could do it mentally because I'm stubborn. However, I just think that there's so many, like, because I've watched so many documentaries and so many behind, like, I've spent, I'm not even kidding, probably 30 hours just watching different interviews, different journeys and everything. And it's just, it's one of those things that is a bucket list for so many people, but so many people don't understand how hard and how physically.
I don't. I really, like, I only hear it from you. And we had somebody who did climb Mount Everest, the first female, I believe, right? First Canadian female to do it. Was that right?
Yeah.
We had her on a podcast. And when she outlined it, I thought, oh my God, that sounds like I learned so much about what happens. Like, I didn't know that you had Sherpas with you. I thought you just, you got your backpack and your pick.
No.
And you climbed up. But
team, so like 19 people, I think he said, will be in a line, corded together. And like, it's such a team mentality. So if one person goes down and falls, they could take out the entire team. Like, Robbie, you got to speak to some of this because you do mountains that are, in my opinion, like very, very daunting, very, very scary, and they're nothing compared to this.
Nothing compared. The mental aspect of it would just be insane because it depends on the day. Like you said, the weather. Mm-hmm. The mental part is it may not be a hard day, but you're sitting in a tent.
Right.
And then we're just waiting if there's a break in the weather. Get ready to go, and we're going now.
So you can be days in a row just in the tent waiting for the right weather.
Absolutely. You need a clearing. Here's the other thing that you don't know or you're not thinking about is when you get to base camp, because it's 1, 2, 3, and 4, I believe, is how it goes up, right? And we are at number 3 and waiting for the final, like, the final peak to summit the final peak.
Yeah.
You're dealing with, like, the lack of oxygen. You're on oxygen masks in the last little bit. You're like, the air altitude sickness that you can feel is, like, something you don't even know what that's like.
Well, how hard would that be for a heart attack survivor?
That's what I'm worried about.
Whose health is already compromised, and he can't get as much oxygen as everybody else?
I know, and, like, so, and then, and the other thing with Everest is it's every man for themselves. As much as these Sherpas are there to help you, as much as everyone's a team mentality, when you get to that final summit...
Yeah,
I mean, it's like you cannot help some. Like, you can't pull somebody. There are people who have had to walk away from their friends, knowing that they're going to die momentarily, because they can't exert the effort to save someone else's life.
Yeah, save the energy.
Are you? Oh my God, really?
So you imagine that? Oh, so the three of us are walking up. Robbie's fit. You and I are having a problem. You're going up a little bit further, and then you guys have to just leave me. And we all know what's about to happen to me, but you have to mentally then go, see you later, Dylan.
I would never do it.
I know, it's...
I would never. I'd rather not go to the top of the mountain and save your life. I can't think of anybody who wouldn't do that.
I know, but you can't because you would die as well.
Yeah, you might not even get home.
Why am I dying? Why don't we just go back down?
You can't because of the altitude sickness and like how crazily exerted you are at that point.
Yeah. You know what? Put me on a beach. How's that?
No.
Robbie, any interest ever in your life?
Not for Everest.
Never?
How come?
No, because of the fact...
But you're an avid mountain climber. You enjoy the accomplishment of climbing a mountain.
I know, but that one, to me, and no offense to anyone who wants to try it, it is the greatest accomplishment as a mountain climber for some, but it's just the length of it, the cost of it.
What if it was free? What if we could drop $65,000 in your lap right now? Is that what he said? $65,000
in 2 months. It's different, right? Because you can get budget Sherpas.
Okay.
Like, and that's a big thing. $65,000 is around that price, but you can get people who will do it way budget less. Sherpas. No, but you can.
Oh, Christ.
And then you got to think, like, so the air sickness.
Like, when you turn to a budget Sherpa and go, what do we do now? And he just goes,
not 100% sure. Yeah. But you're not even taking into account, like, the wind and the freezing temperatures and the avalanche possibility. There's so many things.
I don't want to be 100 meters from some orbiting Everest and then turned to the Sherpa and says, I've never been this high either. Well, I don't know what to do. You get what you pay for, buddy.
Yeah.
I've only been up to here.
Yeah.
So, Robbie, you wouldn't do it even if it was free and you got the time off and there was no, none of those complications were in the way?
If I got the time off and it was free, then of course I'd have to.
Okay, because I promise you that with the amount of people that love you and support you on this radio show.
Oh, yeah, we could do it.
We could raise money for Robbie Climbs Mount Everest. You because, so? A, it would be a wonderful promotion for our radio show.
Yeah, but he might die.
But he might die. But it would be, I mean, he skied down a pile of garbage.
It's not quite the same.
Well, you know?
More people make it than die.
Is that right?
Well, I think it's somewhere around like 5,000 or 6,000 people have made it to the top of Everest. 300 have died.
You know, I like the show, the John Oliver Show, Last Week Tonight on HBO.
I don't understand the name. Last Week Tonight.
It's like a tonight they review the last week. And then they do.
Is it only once a week?
Do you guys watch it? Do you ever watch it? You watch it, Savannah?
I do.
Yeah. Do you watch it religiously, like every week?
No, I watch the clips online.
You watch the clips?
Good, okay. He's a funny guy.
It's a fantastic show, and I can't even imagine the amount of work that's put into that show for the research they do. Normally, it's like the first 5-6 minutes of the show are a recap of the week, and then they go into a well-researched expose on just random things. Like they did plastic a couple weeks ago, and sometimes it's ripped from the headlines. They did a brilliant one on pandemics and the future of pandemics.
Yeah, you talk about that one.
And but they did one on climbing Mount Everest, and it kind of exposes some of the fraudulent stuff behind Mount Everest.
Okay.
And I think it gives kind of a negative view of the idea of summiting Mount Everest, or just a more well-rounded view. And it's interesting to see like some of the effects of climbing Everest that it has on the community and on that, on the people
like in
that
Nepal?
Do it. Did you ever see that one, Savan?
No.
Yeah. It's interesting too. And how easy they make it for some and how it's more of a wealth status thing. If you have the money, you have a much easier way of getting up than those who don't.
And sure.
I just feel like there would be like K2, for example, is like, it's a higher summit, I believe.
Is it higher? It's a harder mountain.
It's a much harder mountain. And I was following along with a guy climbing that one recently. One of his friends died last month as he was doing it. And to me, that one would be way more technically hard. It's not just, hey, I'll pay my way up there. And I'm not saying that's what Leo's doing. It just doesn't appeal to me.
Where is K2?
It's also in near Nepal.
We really think we're a big deal over here with our Rocky Mountains.
We're not.
And then you get out there and you're like,
yeah, tiny. But you got to think, like, remember, as you're walking up.
Yeah. You might die at any time.
You might with that, but you're walking by dead people that they haven't brought down because that's too much energy.
They're just frozen.
They're just sitting there. Like, there's the famous Green Shoes, I think. It's like a point on a map. When you hit Green Shoes, they use it as like a point on a map.
Somebody's body?
It's just some dead guy.
Christ.
It's sitting there. But it's like once you get there, it's just like, oh, okay, well, I'm at Green Shoes. And you, like, think of the mental toll that's taking on you.
Oh, yeah.
Lack of oxygen, lack of energy, lack of food, whatever the case might be. And you're like, oh my God, that guy's dead.
Well, and don't stop factoring in. Like, don't forget to factor in the fact that Leo is a heart attack survivor.
Right.
And only one other person in the history of this planet has done what he is about to attempt.
Well, and you said it best moments ago. Like,
the
fact that you're going to be going up there, the fact that you're heading on up there, the fact that you're facing all these things in front of you, and while still trying to go, and then you have this like deep down inside of you. Oh, this is my goal. This is what I've worked for. Everyone at home's thinking about me.
Yep.
Everyone's constantly like. You don't want to quit.
Shuts down your common sense.
Right? There's no part. That would be my biggest problem.
Yeah, your stubbornness.
Is
your greatest attribute and your greatest detriment for you.
Right? Yeah. I would be dead on top of the mountain because some Sherpa's like, no, you can't go. You're really, there's altitude sickness. I can see it in your eyes. I'd be like, nah!
Yeah.
Right? And just keep on pushing.
That's the altitude sickness talking.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't tell me what I can do.
Right?
Well, we wish him the best, and hopefully in a couple months we can hear from him, and he becomes the first Canadian to ever do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I just get excited for that. I don't know why.
It's definitely amazing.
It's funny because when I asked him the question about that near brush with death, right, with his heart attack, and when I had my heart attack and my stroke...
Why do you do this?
You know, when I was in rehab, I gained new perspective on life, right? Like I gained, maybe not that extreme where it's like, okay, I'm going to live every day to its fullest, but I got out of rehab and I was like, okay, I got to do these things to keep myself straight and clean and pointing forward and focused and being a better person, just generally speaking, right? Mm-hmm. Here's my list of things that I'm going to hold myself accountable to do. And, you know, it was like, go to bed earlier.
Right.
This guy's climbing a goddamn mountain. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And I'm still going to bed earlier, maybe twice a week. Like, it's all falling through the cracks already. But anyway, so, okay. Well, we'll follow up with him.
I love it. It's very cool.
Savannah's here. We're going to explain to you, Savannah, and you feel free to kind of do the interview portion here. You ask whatever question you want. Robbie lived through this kind of... through extension by operating the shows while we were away.
Yeah.
We are going to, because it was told, and we thank you so much, those that listen to this stupid thing, for your feedback. And I messaged a lot of people, as did you, Dylan, as did you, Robbie. I don't know, Savannah, if you were getting back to people. And we thank everybody who did message us on Instagram and said, hey, you know, made it, loved it.
Right.
And
this would be a good part to insert it right now.
Okay. I can't think of one. Dylan, can you think of one?
Yippee you.
Yippee you?
Yippee you?
I don't know. It's got to be something that no one would think to write.
Yippee you.
Yippee you?
Yippee you.
Does that work? You think is that too weird. Hard to spell?
No, it's yeehaw.
I know, that's
yeehaw. That would work.
No. Let's go with yippee you. Very hard to spell. And let's see how everybody spells it.
Yippee you.
So you screenshot the After Show show or take a picture of you listening to the After Show or when you're doing it. Some people do it while they're driving some people are doing it at work or while they're wet, whatever. So screenshot it, tag us. Right? You can tag one of all of us, the three of us, or Savan.
Anything.
Or Pepper and Dylan. Pepper and Dylan's probably the best one. And then just say, yippee you. Yippee you.
I like it. Okay. I don't know why, but I do.
And then everybody who isn't on this little exclusive club will be, what the bleep is yippee you?
That's what I wanted. Like other people that question. Yeah. Like, I got to be part of yippee you.
I got to listen to this goddamn thing. Yeah. Right? And then they'll listen to it and it'll grow. And then once they shut the power down in radio, then we'll be like, hey, look, we've got a thing we can still do. And then we'll make you pay for it. Okay.
No, we won't.
So what else are we going to do?
Advertisers.
We'll try our best not to.
Advertisers.
That's how it works. Have you never listened to a podcast?
Do you pay for podcasts? Here's the thing with podcasts. How on earth are people listening to as many podcasts as there are out there when they're all like an hour, hour and a half long?
Love it. I can't get enough podcasts.
How many podcasts are you listening to every day?
Oh, at least two different ones every day.
How you were going to lie there.
No, I thought you said how many are you listening to?
Seven.
No.
90. No. Two.
I thought you were asking how many like different podcasts I listen to.
Really?
That's what I thought you were asking, but I came to.
Yeah, we all have our go-tos, right? Mm-hmm. 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 Maybe five.
So everybody commented and thank you. And we asked the question because we are trying to make this an accessible and entertaining kind of platform for us. And we're trying to build it. And some of the requests that we got, and we appreciate all of them, we wish there were more of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll happen one day. Another one was, I like when you have guests on. And then another one was, I don't like when you have guests on. And
stories from the archive is the thing that
stories
came up the most.
Old behind the scenes stories from the radio show seems to be the most important. So we will only ask one favor of you. And this is very self-serving, but we will ask it anyway, right here, when we're yippee-ewing. Don't listen to it when the live show is on.
Yeah, that's ideal. That's the issue.
Don't go, I don't like Pepper and Dylan with the music and the commercials, so I'm going to listen to the podcast. Don't do that.
Yeah, then we won't have a job or a podcast.
Yeah, that kicks the shit out of us. There you go. There's your one. I'm allowed one. Okay. So if you can do us that favor, we will try and endeavor to make extra podcasts. Okay?
Yeah,
try and do
100%.
Maybe after the summer's over, we'll roll out two a week or... whatever.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Dylan, you also have the equipment at your house, and once COVID's done, you're interested in us doing our own podcast.
I got a couple messages from people in the last week that said, we'd love garage time ones or like Saturday night ones, like somewhere where you guys are not in your studio. Which that's cool.
The problem with the garage time one, and I mean, I don't know where you're at with garage time. Is garage time back in your life? Or is it?
Sometimes.
Okay, so you're
it's not full blown?
You're not completely clean. Like you're not, again, you're not fully.
He's California sober.
California sober?
Is that,
you explained to me what that meant the other day, and I didn't know. It means you smoke weed, but you don't endeavor into any other.
Yeah, not
drug or alcohol.
No. And
do you drink?
No, not really.
Not really. So once in a blue moon, you'll find yourself getting hammered,
not even hammered. I haven't been hammered probably in like 3 years.
Really? Okay.
Because you can have a beer or two and not have any more.
Love it.
Yeah.
Like having a beer on a summer day after doing the lawn.
You're
with
a fun
neighbor.
Drunk though. I remember drinking with you a handful of times. Yeah. You are fun.
The last time I did, honestly, I think the last time I got loaded. Mm-hmm.
was when I was longboarding and I crashed my longboard in what I thought was the worst accident I've ever had. And I was laying on the ground in a field and my friends had to come get me. It was a mess.
Okay.
And I just thought, no one deserves this.
Right.
No one. And I never really got messy growing up.
Was that the night you fell asleep on the stairs or was that a different night?
No, this was, ultimately when I got back to my house, it was the stairs. I couldn't make it up.
What a cozy bed.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal. But prior to that, I fell asleep in the forest.
Okay.
Which was and people were searching for me. It was just, a mess.
So
I didn't need that.
If we do a garage show, and I'm perfectly happy, I think that would be a great idea. Are you going to indulge while we're doing the garage show? I think that's what people would want, right?
We have to look into if we're allowed.
Legally, yeah. I don't think, from our job, I don't know.
Can we post it elsewhere?
No.
Oh, well, we could do an Instagram live from the garage kind of thing.
But that's still because they own our likenesses.
All that stuff.
Yeah, we could ask our boss if we can get stoned.
No, she'll say no.
Exactly. So I don't know. Unfortunately.
I'll be clean.
It's a double standard.
I'll be clean.
Why?
You could have a drink. You could have beer.
That is true. We can't drink at work.
No, that is true as well.
Yeah.
But you can go to an event and drink. Like a radio event.
It's frowned upon.
Boy, did I ever.
Yeah.
we'll look into that, but that was a request, so.
Either way, I mean, we could still do off-site.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if we need to. Whatever, we'll figure it out.
Anyhow, we appreciate all your feedback. Thank you very, very, very much for what seems to be a growing audience for the podcast. So we appreciate that. Okay, so now what we're doing, we're going to go behind the scenes here on our 15th anniversary of the Pepper and Dylan Show, the 15-year anniversary. We're celebrating this the whole year,
are
we?
Don't get mad about it. There's a lot of shows that don't make it to 5 years.
I know.
That don't make it to 10 years. There's shows being fired daily around here.
Mm-hmm. So, Savannah.
Sorry, Sean.
Sean Berkey.
Yeah, Jesus, good guy. Hey.
I mean, really unfortunate. The guy was great. He's been in this industry since I got here.
Sean Burke.
Yeah.
He let go yesterday.
He used to be on Kissin'. I don't even remember what station he was on recently. The Breeze. Yeah, it's just sad when you hear other people get fired. I hate it in this industry. Like, some people might go like, ooh, all right, another one's not there. But I always just think, oh my God, at any moment that could be us.
Yeah.
At any moment, I just know what he's going through. Like, he woke up, he thought he had a job, he had all these plans, dreams, ambitions, and then all of a sudden, someone decides you don't have those anymore, and you got to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and he'll be fine.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a good man.
Absolutely.
So he'll make it.
So we will go to now one of the first big things we ever did, I believe. 2006 was the year that the Edmonton Oilers had their what many call miracle Stanley Cup playoff run. No one expected it. They squeaked their way into the playoffs in that eighth.
Ooh, can I ask this question as you're telling this story? Because I actually don't know the answer. How long had it been prior to that? Before they had gone to the playoffs.
Because
it
question.
Seemed like people were excited and we had just kind of come to the city at that point.
Yeah, we had just started our radio show in January and this was the playoff run that was happening. And when does it even happen? April? I don't know. COVID's messed it all up. I don't know when anything happens anymore. It traditionally happens, starts around April. Is that right? The Stanley Cup playoffs?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Robbie, do you have or could you look up when it was prior to?
1998 would have been their last.
Oh, okay. So like it was 90, quite a drought, right? Yeah. So the city got electric because they squeaked in the last night or the second last night of the season. Savannah, how old were you in 2006?
2006, I was 13.
Super. Okay. Isn't that great? Okay. Now, you're an Oilers fan, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I enjoy the Oilers. Okay. So, Savannah, what we did, just to give you some background, and we'll start to tell the story. You stop us at any time and ask questions that may occur to you, and Robbie can add a little bit because he was back in the studio. But what we did was decide that, it was thrust upon us, sort of, but we decided.
It's because our boss at the time was a super fan.
Huge Oilers fan.
Of the Oilers. Like, he just loved hockey in the city, and he had lived through some of the playoffs in this city, so he knew what was about to happen.
So it was thrust upon us that we would go and follow the Oilers on the road trip, right?
Okay.
But the trick was we were going to drive there, and wherever we were at 5:30 Edmonton time, we would stop and do our radio show from 5:30 to 9, wherever we were. That was the idea.
On the phone?
We had this weird piece of equipment that's pretty much obsolete
now. Comrex.
It was called a Comrex box, and it would plug into a phone line. So all we had to do was find a dedicated fax line, which would be almost impossible now, but back in 2006, it was a little easier to do. They were a little more commonplace.
Okay.
Now, the Oilers squeaked into the playoffs on the last night or second last night, and they were the eighth seeded team, and they were set to play Detroit, who at the time was the best team in hockey.
Which was, and so the problem was, because of the eighth place, no one saw this coming. There was zero budget for a startup radio station as it was.
Yep.
But then you add in the fact that now you want to build a trip around a team that was about to go to the playoffs with zero money.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it gets interesting.
Right. So we had no money. We had a very limited budget. We had a partnership with a rental company, I believe. Correct me if I get any of this wrong. We had a partnership with a rental company, so they gave us a minivan. Mm-hmm. So off we went one day after the show to drive to Detroit. And we kind of thought it would be a fun little lark to do because they're going to lose both of these games. They're going to come back to Edmonton for games 3 and 4. They might win one, but they'll probably lose in 5. They're the worst team in the playoffs. Detroit was the foregone Stanley Cup winning conclusion that year.
Best team in the league.
They were by far the favorite. And so this will just be a quick thing that we do for a week. It'll be fun, whatever. So we get in the van,
mm-hmm.
and we start to drive. And
there's four of us at the time. It was Pepper, myself, and an engineer named Darcy.
Yeah.
So she could set it up and make sure that everything was going to go okay for the broadcast.
Yeah.
And then Kasma, who is a diehard Oilers fan. I don't know why she was there. Was she the
wall promo? She was like our promotions coordinator, and she would help. She was in charge of the budget.
She kept everything. Yeah. She wanted to make sure. It was great to have extra people because had they not.
Yeah.
Neither one of us would be here.
I tried to go.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah, I offered. I told James over and over I'd go. He's like, I know you would. Oh, but yeah, okay. I had to stay back and operate.
Right. So Robbie was back at the studio operating. Now, again, keep in mind, we had no idea where we would be at 5:30, right? We had kind of an idea. Okay, well, here's where we'll go. Here's where we'll go. And our first one was the easiest. This was our base camp number one. Mm-hmm. It was at our sister station in Winnipeg. We arrived in Winnipeg at about 4 a.m. and we drove through the night and we got there and we just used one of their backup studios and did a show.
It was a boardroom, actually.
It was a board. That's right. It was a boardroom.
It wasn't a studio. That's we were right. inside a giant boardroom mm-hmm. and we just sat across from each other in their boardroom.
So that was day number one. That was easy.
That one went well.
That was easy. Okay. Right? And then we hit the road again immediately right at 9 o'clock Edmonton time. To make our way closer to Detroit. Now, we had to get there for game one, and I can't remember the schedule exactly, but I think we had two nights after that. So our first morning show was Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
Our second morning show, we had our third one, and then the game. So we had to be there, and I think it was Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the game was Saturday afternoon, if I'm not mistaken. So we started driving, and we found ourselves in suburban Chicago. At about, 4 a.m,
mm-hmm.
Dylan? Is that about right?
Mm-hmm.
And by
a little bit earlier, I think, because we arrived earlier and we waited in the driveway.
That's right. And by a stroke of luck. Now, again, remember, we're not staying in hotels. We're not stopping to sleep.
Because we have no money.
We have no money. We're just driving around the clock and in shifts and sleeping in the back of this van.
Yes, with four people.
Yeah, yes, with four people. We have to drive in shifts. We have to sleep in shifts, the whole deal.
The only thing you're stopping for is like fast food.
Mm-hmm.
And not sit-down fast food.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're just grabbing and going.
So we arrive in Chicago, and thankfully, and this has always been weird to me, was this a coincidence, or did we have this plan that we stayed with
Sean
Robbie's mortal enemy, his parents live in Chicago.
I knew that, so right. it must have been a planned stop to some degree.
Has you met Sean's parents?
At that point, I had met his mom.
Okay.
But I don't know if I met his dad.
And Sean wasn't there.
No.
So we're basically barging into a stranger's house in suburban Chicago to do a radio show from their living room.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult to do.
Yeah.
We don't have any of our surroundings. We're technically a little challenged. And
there's no phone calls, no text messages.
We can't get anybody on the air, nothing like that. It's just mm-hmm. us in this empty, quiet house doing a radio show. Like, it sounded weird. It was awkward and uncomfortable. Like, Robbie, you were back here. How terrible were those shows?
The opping was incredible.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but how did the show sound? Like, I had to.
Aside from the opping?
Yeah.
It was good. You guys did a good job.
Nothing to talk about except our journey. But at that point, the show was so new that the audience was building at the time. They had no idea what was going on. We had to reset it all the time. Thankfully, the city was captivated by the Oilers at the time, so you could always fall back on just talking about the Oilers, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
But you have to think about all the things we do on the radio show now. None of those we could do. We had no access to bringing audience members up. We had nothing. It was just us in a freaking living room.
There wasn't even like a blog or a website where we could post pictures alongside this.
Nothing.
So all the pictures
no
that
Instagram,
were taken,
no one Facebook. Did, yeah.
I'll look up some of those pictures today.
Mm-hmm.
And we can we can put them up on our social media because I have them,
yeah.
But I don't think they've ever, no one's ever seen them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because there's a few that surfaced, and I'd seen them for the first time.
Right.
Right? Just there was nowhere to put them. I think Nexopio was big back then. That was it. MySpace?
That was it. Wow. Like you had to develop them.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, because this is pre-iPhone, if I'm not mistaken, is it not? Because I remember Kasmin using her BlackBerry
It was
to find maps.
Yep.
I think it was 7, the iPhone came
okay.
out.
Okay, so anyway, we're a rather uneventful night number two, or day, morning show number two.
I have one question about when you're in the house, what are the homeowners doing during the show?
They went to work.
They're watching.
Yeah. Oh. They just left us.
Okay. They just left us. These strangers.
We had a yappy dog named Tippy, I
think. That's right. That's it. There was we were in there. They're like, well, we got to go to work. And they just left. And we were in this house in Chicago. Like, we could have robbed him blind.
Well, he was my friend.
I understand.
Like, we're not going to do that.
So there. And then we're off to Detroit. And this is when it gets interesting. So far, the first 2 days are rather plain and simple. And then we get to Detroit. And we arrive, we're driving somewhere between Wisconsin, Madison, Wisconsin, and Detroit, Michigan. And we're like, hey, guys, we've got a show in 10 hours or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell are we going to do? Because we're out of ideas. We don't know anybody in Detroit.
I remember this debate because I was in a fight with everybody because I wanted to do 8 Mile. Because the movie had come out. It's the only thing I really knew about Detroit. I had spent a little time when I was younger, but I just remember constantly going like, we got to do 8 Mile. And everyone thinking I was crazy because we were going to just get stabbed and murdered.
Right.
And I just said, no, it's the only iconic thing. Like people will know 8 Mile because of the movie.
Yeah.
We have to do it from 8 Mile.
And it was a different time, right? Where you could make these assumptions because everybody was making them.
Right.
And it wasn't a racial assumption as much as it was a class assumption. And you envision 8 Mile as being kind of the rougher part of Detroit.
Yeah.
Which it was.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Eminem told us.
Yes.
And that's all we had to go on. Yeah. Except I just thought, we have to do it.
And then so Dylan says, let's do it from a gas station in 8 Mile. Or let's just do it from 8 Mile. And then we think, yeah, let's do it. And Kasma was terrified because Kasma's a little bit of a scaredy cat.
She
was terrified of being in that. Oh, my God, what if something goes wrong? What if something happens?
Voice of reason, which is good.
And we decide, nah, let's do our show from 8 Mile. So we drove to 8 Mile in Detroit. We rolled in. I think it was the evening before.
It was the night before that we negotiated, yeah.
That's right. And we found a gas station. And we drove into the gas station. And it was what you would imagine an American gas station in a rougher neighborhood exactly to look like. It was bulletproof shields around the cashier desk.
With a giant gun behind.
It was bars on the windows.
Right, yeah.
It was everything you would imagine it to be.
You could see the gun?
Yeah. For some reason, the gun was like plain as day. It was just hanging on the wall as if like, rob us. I dare you.
And we met the owner of the gas station. And he said he loved the idea for some reason. Mm-hmm. Because I think we bribed him. I think we had enough cash that we could pay people to let us use their fax line for the morning. But he thought it was cool. He thought, is this going to be on the radio in Detroit? And we said, oh, of course it will. we'd lie. And whatever we needed to get our show on the air. And and then he said, well, don't worry, if anybody gives you a problem. And he grabbed the shotgun.
No.
Yes.
And remember, he walked around to where we were setting up our equipment
and pointed
it. I've got one of these for anybody who comes in here.
Nice.
And we're like, holy shit.
That's scary.
There's a second.
Why does this guy have a shotgun?
For anyone that comes into his store?
Yeah. If anybody
problems.
Gives us hassles.
Okay, all right.
So then
he was proud of his gun.
I start to get a little nervous because we're these naive, wet behind the ear, let's be honest, white Canadian people who are just trying to do their job. And we're in a neighborhood where all the business owners feel compelled to have a shotgun and bulletproof glass all over the place. And I don't think many stores make an investment in bulletproof glass unless there's a reason to make the investment in bulletproof glass.
Yes.
And there it was. So we're doing, we go to the hotel. Dylan does one of the greatest things, which I'll never forget, when we find a hotel. And it was the cheapest hotel, although it looked okay on the outside, right?
On the outside.
And we got in and Dylan said, let's wait a little while before we get a room. So we waited until like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And then we went to the desk because Dylan said, go ahead, explain your theory. because it has changed the way I look at the hotel business.
Well, back then, I think now a lot of apps have capitalized on my idea.
But like hotels.com. But this is before they
existed. But the idea was that, listen, you're either going to make some money tonight or zero money tonight on these rooms. And so if you wait long enough, the idea would be that, like, you could negotiate and say, okay, well, it's 10 o'clock. So you're either going to make $0 tonight on the room or let's take it for 60. And a lot of the times I would go to places and they would be cool with that because they'd be like, well, he's got a good point. Mm-hmm. No money or some money. Right. And then you'd have money available. You'd say right here, here it is. And we got a cheaper discounted room because of it, I believe.
You negotiated a great deal. We were the Edmonton Oilers.
I did say we were signing autographs as the Edmonton Oilers that night because we were wearing our jerseys for like picture ops.
Yeah.
And so the entire time we were kind of just like anytime we took a picture, we'd all be in these new jerseys that they gave us. And so we were wearing the jerseys and somebody said, are you part of the team or something like that? And I just thought we would go with it.
You were Dwayne Rolison, the goalie, I believe.
Yeah.
And I was Alish Hemsky, the top
scorer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So it's the only one I think I knew, that and Ryan Smith. And
easy enough.
Anyhow, which Ryan Smith will factor into this story later. Why don't we do Detroit today?
Okay.
And then next week we'll pick up with the other ones, right?
Yeah, that works.
Okay. So, because Detroit's the longest one, is it not?
Mm-hmm. So, well, I mean, they all have different things, but Detroit had the most going on.
So we go to 8 Mile, ready to start our show in the morning on 8 Mile. And I can say, without a doubt, it was one of the funniest experiences of my life for 3.5 hours. Because you know that when you feel foolish for your own naivety?
Right.
For your own fearful naivety?
Yeah.
And you feel borderline... I'll just say it, kind of like a little prejudice, not necessarily racial, but in these assumptions that you make. Dylan, you've got a picture there?
I've got our Detroit pictures up. I'm just showing them real quickly.
Well, let's use some of these for the swipe up for the Instagram promo for the podcast.
Sure. There's 8 Mile. I got a picture of 8 Mile.
Okay, cool.
Here's us inside of the gas station.
There. I didn't know you. I've never seen these pictures before, Dylan.
They look like a couple of Oilers, actually.
Right? Yeah, we could be Oilers. There's the guy in his guns.
Oh, yeah.
He has two.
He's holding them. I've never seen these.
Yeah. Those are, and this. I imagine you're getting to this part of the story with your naivety well, and the greatest picture of all time.
So we're there, and Dylan, in all of his beauty, and this is one of the things I love about Dylan, is how outgoing you are. And especially used to be, and how you just welcomed everybody into your life, and how somehow there was a warmth and a sincerity that came from that made anybody, even the most standoffish of sorts, to just gravitate towards you and accept you for who you were as you were accepting them for who they were. And then it's almost like you could become friends with anybody within minutes of meeting them. And so that gift that you have is what helped relax me in this situation. I don't think it helped Darcy or Kazma, who were sitting in the van the whole time, terrified to get out of the van at the side of the gas station.
Right.
So we were doing this radio show, and sure enough, in walks all these people, all walks of life, from all different backgrounds, but mainly rough backgrounds.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Dylan's greeting them, saying hi, dapping guys up, high-fiving guys. We're wearing our Oilers jerseys. And the interesting thing about Detroit is that it truly is a hockey town.
Yeah.
Like, even though hockey's maybe not the most prolific sport in the U.S., in certain areas it is, and Detroit is definitely one of them.
Hockey town, USA.
They love their baseball and basketball and football, but they knew, right? Some of the people that you would look at and go like, oh, they don't follow hockey, knew that Oilers logo immediately, and some would be rivalrous when they walked in and be like, oh, we're going to kick your ass.
Right.
Some would be like, oh my God, what are you guys doing here? Game's tomorrow.
Right.
And it was amazing. So anyway, these people start coming in, and they are starstruck with two guys from Edmonton, of all places, thinking that we're doing a radio show, because basically we're just standing there holding microphones and headphones.
Yeah.
And they are the most fun. They're guys that hung out there for like an hour.
Oh, they just wanted to be part of the show.
Yes.
That's fun.
And then this guy comes in, a real shifty fella, and he bilked you on some sort of con job. And I don't know if you remember what it was, but I watched you getting completely taken for your money when he was talking to you.
I don't remember this.
He totally pulled like one of those old like card shark scams on you. And I'm sitting there going, Dylan, this guy's just scamming you. Like he was one of those, right? He played a trick on you. And next thing you know, you're giving him like $50.
There you go.
And you're like, all right, see you later. He's like, all right, see you later, brother. And he just just leaves.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a second. I just gave that guy $50 somehow.
Oh, I was having a blast.
And then that picture of those two guys that rolled up in the car. You go ahead and tell this story, Dylan.
It was just my favorite because like you immediately would judge just these people, the fact that they roll up in this broken down truck that's the loudest, noisiest truck ever, and they just get out and you're like, oh, what are these guys about to do? What is about to happen? And they just look mean mugging. They looked angry. They come up and they were like right in our face, like, what's this all about?
Yeah, we thought we were in trouble at that point. No. And we were ready for that guy to get the shotgun.
Right. I'm just like, oh, I don't know what this is. Maybe this is what everyone's kind of warning us about. Maybe this is why people were upset. Maybe this is 8 Mile in your head. And I just like, oh, we're just doing a radio show. And just immediately after, greatest two guys on the planet, just giving us hugs and just wanted to.
They wanted to take us around the city. Oh. They wanted to do everything. So we're taking pictures and we'll use that picture for the Instagram thing.
Yes.
And it was amazing. It was truly one of my favorite. It was an awful show. I think, Robbie, you're back here. Do you remember anything that we're missing on that show?
I was pretty new. So at the time, like anything was cool to me. Right. Like, I didn't know much at all. I'm sure they were clunky and loose.
For sure.
And just no flow or rhythm. But
it was terrible. The show was terrible. I remember George Laroc came on the air that day, right? We had him. We figured out how to get phone calls on. We patched him through, but our system kept dropping.
Right.
Out for some reason. And he had, George Laroc was infamous for the worst cell phone of all time. Like you couldn't understand a goddamn word. Yeah, and even if it was a clear reception, he wasn't. I think he held the thing upside down for most of his life.
Oh, George.
And but we had him on and then we lost connection from him and we tried to get him back. And then we were like, you know what? Forget it. Let's just do our thing.
Right.
And we did our thing. And it was one of the best. As awful as the show was, it goes down as one of the most fun shows we've ever done for what was happening in the convenience store.
Exhilarating, to be honest. Like, just the people, the energy, the fun, the interactions, like everything. You just walked away from there going like, oh, 8 Mile. I would live here. Yes. These guys, everyone's amazing.
100%. And again, we're not aware of the geography of Detroit. We're not aware of the city. So the next morning, that's when I was still training for a marathon. A half marathon.
There you go.
And I would get up every morning and go for a run. And what I didn't know is that when I got back to the hotel, they said, wow, you're up early going for a run? I said, yeah. And a lady came up from the back and said, you went for a run in this neighborhood? I'm like, yeah, why? That's when I pooped. I had to poop on the sidewalk.
Pooped on 8 Mile?
Yeah, I wasn't 8 Mile. It was a few blocks away. I think it was 6 Mile.
Oh.
That's what I didn't know about Detroit. They have like 1 Mile, 2 Mile, 3 Mile, 4 Mile as their main roads, right?
Right.
And I think we were on 6 Mile. But it wasn't far from 8 Mile.
Okay.
And I had to go.
Right.
But anyway, and then we had our second night at the hotel.
That's when it was awesome.
Now this.
Hey, wait. We've done a lot of trips together. Is this also Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday? Was that part of this trip?
Yes, that's right. Oh, that was on the Saturday night after the hockey game.
Okay, so you go ahead, because I want that to be
this,
part of the story.
This story might have actually been, this might have been the Saturday night. Anyway, we go to, the game is relatively secondary for all of this, but lo and behold, the freaking Oilers won.
But this is the one game we got, like one of the very few games we actually got to watch.
All four of us, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, tickets.
Yes.
This is one of the rare ones.
George Laroc would give us tickets once in a while. Right. But they were hard to get in Detroit. Some of the other cities, they weren't as difficult. But we got in. And what would you know that Detroit won the damn hockey game? Edmonton won the damn hockey game.
Yeah.
Completely unexpected. So they're up 1-0 with another game, you know, 2 more nights away or whatever.
Whatever it was, yeah. They were playing good.
And that's the night, one of the nights. They won game 2-2, but that's all secondary, right?
Yes.
So one of the nights after the game, we went to a casino.
Yes.
And we wanted to have buffet. All Dylan wanted was buffet. Let's go. I mean, we're not going to go on this road trip and not get buffet.
Amen.
So we go to the buffet at the casino and it's crab night.
Oh my goodness.
It's all you can eat crab leg night at the buffet. Now, I don't know if Savannah, you've ever been to all you can eat crab leg night.
I haven't.
It is an experience like no other when you're dealing with the casino community, because these people, these casino goers that go to the casino buffet, they like their deals. They like their values. Okay. And I am convinced that crab legs, while can be deemed as a high class food.
Sure.
In a casino, they're not. And these people, I'm sure, starved themselves for days to eat as many crab legs for $19.99 as they possibly could.
Okay. Awesome.
There were, you walked in and all you could hear, it was this eerie silence in the buffet because all you could hear was the clanging of utensils and slurping.
Yeah, just getting all that meat out.
It's what you would imagine like a cafeteria at a mute school to sound like. There were no sounds. Okay. There was no talking.
It was amazing.
In fact, we were whispering because we didn't want to disrupt the silence. Because all you could hear were people shucking and eating crab legs.
And these were my people, because there were people with plates that had 10, maybe 12, 13, 14 legs stacked
these
on top of each other.
Giant crab legs.
And I was just like, this is amazing.
They had to carry the crab legs with one hand on the bottom of the plate.
Right.
And one
right.
hand on the top of the crab to balance it.
Of course.
You know?
Yeah.
It looked like they were holding little mini leaning towers of Pisa, but it was all crab leg.
It was okay. amazing.
So tasty. Anyway, that was crab leg night. And that was the Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Oh, that's right. This is where it ended with just a big group of girls had come in, and Pepper was at the dessert bar, and he was making himself.
These sweet old black women had just come from the slot machine.
It was it's my favorite interaction of humans ever. But he's building, and he's all Pepper. When he gets excited and he's building, he's creating this this ice cream mess of everything, like anything and everything. He's putting muffins on it or like a cake on it, and he's just building. And one of the girls came up and just said, "Oh my. Is that a Sunday?" Yeah. And Pepper just looked at her without missing a beat. He's like, "That's a Sunday, Monday, and a Tuesday." Yeah. And they all just were rolling on the floor laughing.
You got it. That is the best.
And they're like taking pictures of my Sunday.
Cute. Just loved them.
So anyhow, we get back to the hotel. I think this is the same night, and this is where we'll end, because this is the climax of the Detroit
it
trip.
Truly
right?
Is.
This is the kicker of the Detroit trip. And then we'll do San Jose next week.
And so,
you go ahead, Dylan.
It's my favorite. We're in the hotel. We get back. We're in the lobby. We're waiting, and all of a sudden, we click the hotel or the elevator button, and a couple of us are in, and I'm holding the door for people because there's people coming, and they're carrying crates,
and, like milk crates.
Yeah, milk crates. And so they all pop in, and so it's a very weird mix because there's like a dude that's just like a little bit overweight, kind of balding dude.
Okay.
And there are two girls that look like they're out of Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
Done up to
but
the
like,
nines.
Like kind of gross Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what you imagine Hollywood would be if it was shitty.
Oh, boy.
All right. Okay.
And so, and they're carrying a lot of AV equipment, which we couldn't really figure out what they were doing, but they had
electric
all sorts
cords, lighting.
Right.
Just, yeah.
So it was weird to see it, but then we get off on our stop. They get off on their stop.
There was four of them, correct? Two women, two men? Yeah.
And it ends up that we're all on the same floor. So much so that we are beside each other.
And this hotel's like empty, and somehow they roomed us just beside each other.
Because I think probably the rest of the hotels were under, I don't know, fumigation or something.
They're all murder rooms.
You also got the bargain deal. So they probably put you on that floor on purpose.
So anyways, we don't think too much of it at this point, because we just go in and it's weird, and then you got film stuff. But so did we, right? Because we had the little Comrax machine.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wonder if they're following the Oilers too.
Maybe.
And so we get there, we go amongst our night. Darcy and I believe Kasma slept across the hall from us.
Yeah, they had a different room.
And then we were next to whatever was happening with the AV situation.
Yeah.
To which we didn't know until a little bit later, when the door kept opening and closing and opening and closing. And
they
we thought
busy.
It was Darcy and Kasma, because I was like, what is going on? And I peeked out. These girls now are in performance costume and continue like go knock on the door, and then they get put in. And at this point, I'm like, something weird is going on. Now, Pepper's bed is closest to the wall that we share.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm out in the hallway trying to figure out what's going on. I'm texting or phone call. I didn't think we could text at that time. I'm phoning next door to ask Kazma and Darcy, can you see anything? Like, what's going on? Why do they keep opening the door? What is happening?
We could text. I had a Nokia a Motorola flip phone.
Hey, this is what it was.
Razor. I had a Razor.
So we're trying to figure out what's going on. And then Pepper just like, I think I know what's going on.
Well, you woke me up.
Well, because I was so.
Did you hear that?
There's so much going. Like, they just kept opening and closing doors. It's like, what is happening here? Mm-hmm. And then you're still lying in bed listening. I'm just trying to figure out, like, by looking through the peephole of what the heck's happening and wondering why these girls are dressed the way they are.
And there was music playing, right? Mm-hmm. Over and over, it was the same song. And yeah. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this. It was Whitesnake, was it not?
It might. I don't remember that much. And then, it turns out that the noise that Pepper was hearing from that side was, it was a rewarding situation.
It was a porno.
They were filming a porn.
Wow.
And so then we just started listening with cups to hear what was happening.
No, you didn't.
Oh, God.
What are you kidding me?
Really?
The porno being filmed.
It's my dream come true, man.
You were in the hallway doing this?
No, we're in the room.
Up against in our room, wall. Okay.
The wall I'm closest to, right? Dylan and I are both like just creeps with a cups.
Does that work?
A wall? Not really.
We heard a lot.
It was loud enough, I think.
Right?
And we're just listening in, right? So it's like we were listening to porn, basically.
It was so neat, though.
It was pretty exciting.
Like, because listening to porn, different if it's just on a computer.
Right.
It was being filmed right
this
there.
This was live in the moment.
Right.
So we run across the hall, and we knock on Kazma and Darcy's door, and we wake them up. They're fast asleep. We're going, you guys are going to come back on a porn. And then all four of us have our ears against the wall listening for an hour to them making porn.
Yes.
All night they made porn. All night.
Well, because they probably booked the hotel and they got to get the shots and they don't want to be like,
it's just all night porn.
I just didn't know that's how porn was made. I thought it was made in studios. I thought there were sound stages. No, I didn't know that porn was made.
I think this is a relatively low budget
different
porn.
Kinds. Right?
I looked later.
Did you?
I never would find anything. You ever walked into one of those? Remember when there used to be porn stores?
Yeah.
That was a time, huh?
Yeah, interesting.
They don't have those anymore.
No, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's good for everyone that we can get it right at home. But there we were in the hotel next to the porno being filmed. It completed the trip.
It did.
It really was awesome.
And then we saw them on the elevator on the way home the next day. Mm-hmm. And there they were on like loading back all their stuff into the van. And we're just like, and they looked like crap.
Just spent. Well,
yeah, like obviously, I'm sure they were coked out and up all night and all that. And then we just said, you guys have a good night? And they just kind of were like, yeah. Like it was more exhausted than rewarded.
Well, they were working all night. Give them a break.
So, there was a porn being filmed in the room next to us. We did a radio show from 8 Mile in Detroit. I ate a shrimp that I reheated by putting on the dash the next day of the car while driving.
Right.
And a few other little things. I think the one of the big ones that I noticed, this is when I learned that Dylan was a very fast driver. We were driving home because God damn it, we had to get home.
Mm-hmm. Right for the game. Mm-hmm.
We had to get home quicker than we could come out. Because the turnaround was like the next night, right? Because they played every other day.
Yeah, yeah.
So we had to get the hell back there. So we were going full tilt back. And
we were supposed to have tickets in the catwalk, right? Yep. Like that's where we were in the, what is it, Rexall?
Yes. And in the rented minivan, Dylan was driving somewhere between Lansing, Michigan, I think, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I looked at the speedometer on a crowded interstate in the middle of the day.
Who got you home quick?
Dylan was going 150 kilometers an hour.
Dude,
that's not even that fast.
It's pretty fast.
He was like blowing past cars. And I was like, Jesus Christ, Dylan, do you usually drive this fast?
Need for speed, man.
He's like, yeah, this is normal speed. He's going 150 kilometers an hour.
Which was totally fine. We got home safely.
We did get home quicker.
Just wait until the second installment when someone fell asleep on a mountainside going 100 kilometers an hour.
It was in the middle of the night.
That.
I didn't know the road was that windy. It wasn't. The road wasn't windy when I fell asleep.
It sure was. It was when I woke up.
That's right. Yeah, we'll have that. And what else will be on that that San Jose, that second leg of the trip?
The tequila story.
The tequila story.
When alcoholism started for Pepper.
Yep.
When is the fight? Your guys' biggest fight? Was that on this trip?
That'll be part three. That'll be Anaheim. Was that Anaheim or San Jose?
Can't remember. I blocked it from my memory.
The biggest fight we ever got.
Fights
yeah. No, that was Anaheim. That would have been the Western Conference Finals. Maybe we'll get to that as well next week. So round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, ultimately, as we know, Edmonton won. It was the night my daughter was conceived was one of those games, right? Because I had to get my sex in because we were on these damn road trips so much. And we realized, oh my God, the Oilers are going to win this series. We've got to do it again.
Yeah.
But we've got no money.
It gets worse.
To be continued.
Oh,
yeah. $0 and a trip to San Jose. Our biggest fight when I became an alcoholic,
yep,
and how we have made a mortal enemy out of a journalist in this town who will never talk to us again.
And don't forget, don't you ever forget the fart that almost canceled it all.
Oh, yeah! That's right!
There's a lot more to come on this, Savannah. We'll cover it next week.
Memories.
Thank you for listening to the After Show.
Wow.
The Pepper and Dylan Show.
Weekday mornings on KISS 91.7.